remember, let's end the department. Let's start again. And we're able to confess and be human like. Mona Bisuba, I just lala amba amba. Okay. Members, let's just recap. We went until page 4, just before appointment of the chief executive officer, and that's where we're going to be starting. So ready, fasten your seatbelt. We're going to be starting now. We are at appointment of Chief Executive Officer, which is 79A. I'll go on. 1, the minister must, subject to the laws governing the public service, appoint a fit and proper and suitably qualified South African citizen as a chief executive officer of the office. What do we say there?
involved in that is I drafted the changes for the board as opposed to the CEO. So I don't know if the chairperson wants to proceed on the basis of the document that I prepared, which is the appointment of the board of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, or, I mean, because seeing as we now have a board instead of a CEO.
Okay, I thought this document, since we have not read it, is something that I will allow the members to look at, and then we start discussing it. But now we'll just continue.
I'm not sure whether that's fair. Is that okay with you, members?
Okay. The answer was saying, well, even Gary is not saying that this is what we must take, but all he's saying is that if somebody has got dual citizenship, it means that person has got citizenship, South African citizenship. You don't worry about the dual part of it, but the fact that that person has got South African citizenship, it makes that person to be able to be a candidate for this post.
Now a person is coming and questions it, unless it reflects somewhere in our identity documents that I do have a dual citizen.
Okay, Mamdo.
Actually, all the bills and the laws that we make, they do reflect South African citizenship. It never speaks about duality of citizenship. So, and some say, if one is a South African resident, but most of them talk about South African citizenship. So, a dual or not dual has never been an issue that was pointed out before in any law, except one is a South African citizenship. I mean, is a South African citizen.
Thank you, Jefferson. To my understanding, what Honorable Grace is saying, talking about the foreigners, because after some years, about 5 years, now they are regarded if they are employed here. I'll make the example about the doctors. They come here and work in the hospitals, and then after 5 years, they are given full status of being a member of South African citizen. So I think that is where she is talking about those people. So if now she happens to be in South Africa on those terms, what is the position? Maybe the legal expert can help us there. On the foreigners. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not sure, but you are going to come in here. I think here we're talking about an official who's going to perform a particular duty. And the most important thing is the qualifications. Is that person qualified to do that job? And I seem to suspect that even if it was a foreign person, we would actually import that person if we didn't have somebody who could fit in here. But here, for the sake of the bill, it has been stressed that it must be a South African citizen. Whatever way that you attain that citizenship, but at that time, you are a South African citizen. That's what it's going. But you can come in then.
Thank you, Chairperson. In relation to foreigners who come into the country, after 5 years, it's the residence that you get. It's not citizenship. Residence happens after 5 years, and citizenship is a process which you need to apply for after a while, and that's not automatic. And in your ID document, you'll see it says this section on the very first page where your photo is. It says place of birth, and then it will stipulate exactly where you're from. And that will then indicate whether you have attained citizenship and then gotten your ID. If you're a resident, you don't get an ID. So that should be the distinction. You'll see if someone needs to apply in terms of the section, an ID document will say, I am a citizen. Even though the place of birth in the document will say Germany or Scotland or wherever.
Thank you very much. In fact, the way I understood you, Chris, if you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I think the one part that seems to be, what I thought Chris wanted to know is about the patriotism of the person. Is that person going to be patriotic? That's why I'm stressing this part, that we just want an official who's going to be able to carry out the job. Whether that person is patriotic or not, I think that's not the most important part for this one. I think there are certain areas where you would need somebody who's patriotic about South Africa, over and above the administrative capabilities of that person. Okay. Seeing no hands, can you go on to number two? Number two says the chief executive officer holds office for a term of 5 years and may be reappointed for one additional term of 5 years. Agreed. Okay. Well, I think there's something that was mentioned. I think it was mentioned by Monobis, where DPSA is looking at this 5 years, whether this 5 years is going to be enough or it can be changed by Department of Public Service and Administration, which, by the way, it should not only go to officials, administrators, it should go to politicians too. We should But I think, well, in any case, even if it changes, it will change with some of the laws that have been passed too.
Okay.
Number three, the appointment of a person as the chief executive officer is subject to the conclusion of a written performance agreement entered into between that person and the minister.
Hoping that you're able to bring me up to speed so that I can be where your heads are at the moment. Now, the chief executive officer, is it still necessary if there's a board? I'm just trying to get this.
Thank you very much. There is a document that we have been given by Ugeri. We haven't read it because we got it here now. We thought as soon as we finish, then we'll go back to that document. So, in fact, since we agreed on a board, I think certain areas, we're going to leave them as they are, but knowing that when we look at this document, some of the parts are going to be changed to the board.
Okay, no, because it just occurred to me that maybe some of the discussions we're having might not be necessary at the end of the day. You know, so we might just be taking time that we maybe don't need to take. If that stuff's not going to be there, we maybe will be sorry we discussed it.
What I'm gathering from Honorable Dudley is that maybe though we agreed that you can look at this document later, probably we need to look at it now. Because this seems to be the suggestion. Because there are a lot of things that are going to impact on the board, whether the board or the minister or... And we're going to need to make sure that they are written in such a way that they reflect what we want it to reflect. What do other members say?
Chair, I tend to agree, and I have glanced at this first one, so we do have a chief executive officer as according to the new definition. But I think it does make sense for us to look at what has been accepted here first, and then we can make consequential changes. And not spend time on things that are unnecessary at a later stage.
Okay. Honorable Fed.
I'm covered, Shepherdson.
Okay. Any other dissenting voice to the suggestion that we look at this now?
Earlier on, didn't you say that the left go through the document? The legal expert will see when the board calls.
No, Chris, I don't think you are wrong. We had agreed on that. But what seems now coming from Honorable Dudley is that we envisage that it might happen that way, that most of the things that we're going to be looking at, if we're saying that there must be a board, there are certain things that are going to change. And obviously what we need to make sure that they are written in a manner that is acceptable to us. Not to leave it by chance and say we'll fit it in. If it's supposed to be a CEO, the CEO is supposed to report to a board, we wait until late. We say now the chief executive also must report to the minister for now, but knowing that it's going to be said, we rather change it now and say if there's going to be a board, then the CEO must report to the board. We make that suggestion here and now. I think this is what is being said. Okay, Honorable Kenny.
Thanks, Jefferson. I don't know. Before lunch, the reason why we decided to start without this, we're waiting for this document. Therefore, I don't know. I just have another proposal. Can't we go through this document? Then... now that we've just started it, to check if what is going to have to change in the bill itself, in the new document that was just given by the lawyer.
Okay. Are there any dissenting voices? This is a second or two saying that let's look at the document. Okay. Members, then can we agree that we're just going to ask
amended in pink to say that's the prerogative of the committee to decide, and I will then take guidance from the committee and from the department, and then we can change what's necessary so it reflects what the committee, what the board is, and how it's written into law will be something that the committee owns. So I will take direction from the committee, and instead of waiting to the end of the presentation, the members are welcome to interrupt and say, maybe we should do this, because then I can make the necessary changes as we go along, as I explain. Okay. So the first section is entitled the appointment of the board of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, and I've already been approached by the department to say that maybe we should change, seeing as there is now a board, maybe we should change the name of the office now to a council of health standards compliance as opposed to just an office. So if the members feel that that is appropriate, we can then change it from the Office of Health Standards Compliance to the Council of Health Standards Compliance. Maybe the department might want to say something about that as well, or the state law advisor. I will then proceed. Section 79A, now in the bill, says the affairs of the Office of Health Standards Compliance shall be managed and controlled by a board, which was previously now the CEO, which shall, subject to the provisions of this Act, determine the policy and overall objectives of the Office of Health Standards Compliance and exercise control generally over the performance of its functions and the exercise of its powers and the execution of its duties. Subsection 2. And this is where the committee has free reign to decide how the board is composed. So I've highlighted in pink and I've said that the category of persons and the amount of persons that need to be appointed by or to the board can be determined by the committee. So I have suggested, and it's merely a suggestion, I said that there will be a chief executive officer. Seeing as it is, it might change to a council and it is a board, we can change that CEO to a chairperson, which might reflect more appropriately. A2, not less than 7, but not more than 14 members who have distinguished themselves in the healthcare sector. We can change this as well as the committee decides and deliberations with the department, and not more than 2 other members. I have been approached by one of the members of the committee to say that we might want a legal person as well on the board in terms of complaints, etc. So feel free to interrupt or make suggestions with regarding to how we compile, for lack of a better word, the members of this board, which will be appointed by the minister. And 3, a member of the board, excluding the president, which I apologize if the president should not be the president, but rather the CEO, or if we decide on a chairman or a chairperson, then it will be a chairperson, shall hold an office for a period not exceeding 5 years, but shall be eligible for reappointment. Subsection 4, a member of the board shall vacate the office if he or she reaches the age of 70, if he or she is declared insolvent or surrenders the estate, is found guilty of an offence and sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine, or is absent for 3 consecutive months from the board without consent of the chairman. He or she resigns as a member, or F, Roman numeral 1, is in terms of the provisions of the Electoral Act as a candidate for election as a member of parliament, or 2, he or she, in terms of provisions of the Republic of South Africa Constitution, which should be changed there, that citation is outdated, nominated as a member of parliament, or appointed or designated as a member of the President's Council. OG, his or her term of office is terminated in terms of subsection 5, which deals with the termination of a member of the board. The minister, now subsection 5, the minister may, with the concurrence of the board, at any time discharge a member of the board from his office if the minister is of the opinion that such a member is incompetent to fulfill his or her duties or is guilty of misconduct. 6, if a member dies or by written notice directed to the minister resigns or in terms of subsection 4 or 5 ceases to be a member, the minister may, subject to the provisions of this section, appoint a person in his or her place for the unexpired period of the his or her term of office. The chairperson and chairman in this case, and other members that the remuneration will be set according to the HOD, the level of HOD of the department. So we can change the wording to suit the rest of the bill. Then following page, subsection 8, the minister shall appoint a member of the board as a deputy chief executive officer, or if we change it, it will be the deputy chairperson. If a chairman is unable to perform his duties in terms of the act, the vice chairman shall act as chairman of the board, and whilst the vice chairman is thus acting, he or she shall exercise all the powers and perform all the duties and functions of the chairman. The chief executive officer or deputy chief executive officer, or in their absence, a member of the board elected by the members present, shall preside at a meeting of the board. This is the relevant subsection that deals with the meetings of the board. The minister may, after consultation with the board, from time to time reserve any matter approved for in this act as a matter in respect of which decision of the board shall be subject to the consent of the minister. The appointment of a chief executive officer, which will then, with the relevant indulgence of the committee, can be changed to chairperson. 79B, the minister must, subject to the laws governing the public service, appoint a fit and proper and suitably qualified African citizen as a chief executive officer of the board. The CEO holds the office of a term of 5 years and may be reappointed for an additional term of 5 years. I've taken this largely from the section that existed in the bill before. The appointment of such of a person as a CEO is subject to the conclusion of a written performance agreement entered into between that person and the minister. The minister and the CEO may, in writing, amend that performance agreement. 4, the minister may remove the CEO from office on account of serious misconduct, ill health, and inability to perform the functions of the office effectively. If the CEO is unable to perform the functions of the officer during the vacancy in the office of the CEO, the minister may designate another member of the board to act as CEO. No person may be designated as a chief executive officer for longer than 90 days at a time, and the CEO is entitled to the pension retirement benefit as calculated on the same basis as those of a head of department in the public service. That's maybe we'll see again that in the previous page where I spoke about the remuneration, that is where it comes in. The meetings of the board. The meetings of the board shall be held in times and places as the board may determine, provided that the first meeting shall be held at such a time and a place as the chairman may determine. The CEO or in his or her absence, the deputy chief executive officer, at any time in his or her discretion or on the request of the minister or president, convene a special meeting of the board which shall be held at a time and place as the chief executive officer and deputy chief executive officer, as the case may be, may direct. The quorum for a meeting of the board shall be the majority of the members of its members. A decision of the board shall be taken by resolution of the majority of the members present at the meeting of the board, and in the event of equality of votes on any matter, the person presiding at the meeting in question shall have a casting vote in addition to the deliberative vote as a member of the board. No decision taken by the board or act performed under the authority of the board shall be invalid merely by reason of a casual vacancy of the board. And then functions of the board. Which is 79D, the board is responsible, which is also taken largely from the existing bill, is responsible for the proper and diligent implementation of the PFMA and must appoint suitably qualified persons as employees of the office in accordance with an organizational structure approved by the minister. The board is responsible for A, the formulation and development of an efficient administration, the organization and control of staff, the maintenance of discipline, and the effective deployment and utilization of staff to achieve maximum operational results of the Office of Health Standards Compliance. The CEO of the board may enter into contracts with any person, organization, or appoint expert or technical committees to assist the office in the performance of its functions, including the conducting of inspections. And one of the consequential changes that will happen as a result of the inclusion of a board as opposed to just the CEO is that it will no longer be an accounting officer in terms of the PFMA, but an accounting authority. So now, instead of one person acting as an accounting officer, you'll have a group of persons that is appointed at the board as an accounting authority that will then make decisions in terms of the PFMA. I do apologize. that was referred to in the provisions are taken from an old act and is not a president, but rather the refers to the CEO, or if the members decide to change it, it'll be a chairperson.
Thank you, Kevin. That is the presentation which has got a lot of implications for what we're trying to do here. Firstly, that one of changing the name, if we get, I mean, we agree that there must be a board changing the name. And secondly, I think we need to, there must be a question as to whether, I think this bill that we're talking about has been budgeted for. As to, obviously there must be funds that are counted before this day. Now, if we add financial implications, if we add a board, what are going to be, are the financial implications going to change? And that we need to know. But I'm not sure, members, you should ask your questions, but there's another thing that becomes interesting. I think with our little knowledge, or let me say with my little knowledge, there is a council of the medical aid schemes, I'll make that example, where there's a council and there's a registrar. The registrar is employed by the minister, but he reports to the council and they take decisions together. So I thought even this one is going to be a situation because we're worried about the independence. So it must be something that the CEO reports to. But at the same time, that board will be set up by the minister himself, and then there is a board to unless the. Maybe I'm confusing issues. I saw Pat, Mr. Khale, Grace, and Honorable Dudley.
Okay. Chairperson, I think you're asking the same question that I was concerned. The other thing I just wanted to find out who's going to appoint the board. And in terms of reporting the board will be reporting to whom? That's just the thing that I wanted to understand. Even the chairperson, what is the line of reporting?
Though MEPET, there is something that says the board is going to be appointed by the minister. There is something that says so. In fact, we haven't read the document thoroughly, but it talks about that. But then you don't know who's going to be reporting to. As Ukeri was putting it, my understanding was that it seems as if the whole authority is going to be the one that reports to the minister. Whereas I think the independency that we're looking for somebody who's going to report to the board. But let me not confuse issues. I think it's Grace, Mr. Khale, Honorable Dudley, and you, Honorable Robinson.
Chairperson, I think maybe also the word chairman, someone's chairperson. This chairman, we should also correct it if we are going to agree with the chairperson. But also I want to find, you know, I told you that I'm a slow catcher. I see the appointment of the chief executive officer on the other page. But here we are saying if we delete the chief executive officer, it's going to be a chairperson. Now it confuses me because is it going to be a chairperson whereby we delete the CEO, or we are going to go with the chairperson and leave the CEO? Because I'm getting more confused. I'm confused.
I think, members, what we need to be very much aware of is that this bill is ours. At the end of the day, it's us who are going to decide what needs to be done. But we had asked Kukeri to help us and guide us. But at the end of the day, we are the ones who are going to say, this is how it must go. Honorable Sahar?
Chairperson, thank you very much. In the first place, I just want, and I want, department to be saying that why didn't they consider the board initially? I just want to know that. Another one, when I look at the at 279A2, whereby the board will consist, then I just wrote in the, that pink, I just put it in brackets to be saying what are the financial implications. And I think you talked about it. To be saying that we are sitting here, we are coming up with another financial implication, because now if we are going to say it's going to consist of members, not less than 7, not more than 14, what are the financial implications? And another thing, the board, where it is, is there any offices of the board? What are the financial implications around that? That's my problem. Then I know that you can delegate responsibility, but not authority. I cannot really now, after this, I cannot really make up a clear point who is who. The CEO, the board, all those things. The issue of the chairperson and or the chairman is being like set. Then there is this issue of, is there any specific reason? Maybe it's just because I'm nearing 70. Then after my if I don't come back after 2014, I will be 70. It means that I cannot be a board member. Why 70 in particular? Because I can be 75 or 80, still looking strong, not having whatever, and having my sense, and having the real issue of knowledge to really part to contribute. I think for now, I have make a question mark in your comment. G2 can be changed according to the decision by the committee, the builders. I don't like you say the builders mentioned that it will be at the same level as the HOD. Whom are we talking about here? And I don't see, maybe I have like didn't see it, or I was absent when it was read, whereby this chairperson, who appointed the chairperson? Okay. I think I'm very much lost now.
Thank you.
You're going to come after another problem. I think you're going to come after another problem. Okay,
I must confess that now that I'm confronting this whole concept of a board and I'm seeing 16 extra people and all of the cost implications and that, and then I'm looking and thinking, well, what do we have more independence-wise? Because this chair is still appointed, and the whole board are appointed by the minister and fired on the same ground. So I'm thinking we're gaining kind of nothing, especially since that CEO, that chair can access any expertise that they need, so that CEO could also access any. So now that I'm actually looking at it and I'm trying to figure out what we've gained by giving ourselves all this extra expense, I'm not seeing that we've gained anything. Now, I'd like to know if I'm wrong. So perhaps now I'm starting to think that the suggestion we had earlier about simply involving Parliament more in the appointment may be a lot more cost-effective and perhaps make a lot more sense. I'm happy to have my mind changed if we are gaining something, but I'm not seeing it here. Thank you.
But sort of, I'm a little Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. May I ask from the department, this has been budgeted for first before I proceed, if you don't mind, Chair. The doctor is here.
We only have a budget, a firm budget, as I'm sure you are aware, for this year. In the medium-term expenditure framework, there would be an opportunity when the new budgets are submitted in from August onwards for us to include the cost of a board. Up till now, it has not been necessary. So in the current budget that is on the table, a board has not been necessary. So it was not budgeted for up to this point in time. That, however, could obviously be changed as the office goes, as the whatever goes forward.
Continue, Chair.
You continue, Martin. I think I'm getting a little bit worried that even if it's a law that we're making, but we should be clear that how much is it going to cost and are we going to have that money, so that we don't pass a law here only to find that there's not going to be enough money to do that. So it's something that we should know.
Thank you, Chairperson. I mean, it would obviously be possible to take a policy decision that some of the funds that have currently been envisaged as being used for other functions might better be used for the expertise that would arise or be available from a board. So I'm not saying that there would be no money to do this. The question was whether it has been budgeted for. So I was trying to answer that question. If there were to be a decision that a board would be needed, it's not that there would be no money. It's there would need to be a review of how the money that has been allocated could be made available for a board.
We don't understand each other. What I suspect what the other members are trying to say, what I'm trying to say too, is when you sit down and plan that we need to have an Office of Standards of Compliance and make it a policy or a law, there must be a budget that you are sure that when everything is there, there's going to be a budget for it to do all these hearings and whatnot and whatnot. And you put aside that one. But there must be money that, you know, when it has been enacted, the budget is going to be there. And you must have budgeted all this even before it's passed. That this is the question that is being asked.
Chair, maybe they should even answer, why didn't they consider it initially? The board? Yeah, I want to know.
Regarding the costs, I think we have to understand that costs of a board are driven obviously by the seniority and expertise of the members of the board, which I'm sure people would not like to compromise on. They're also driven by the numbers, because not all boards consist of 14 plus 2 people. I mean, there could be a board that would be a lot smaller, and that some of the expertise could come from less highly paid technical advisors. But it's also very much the hours that the board works. So if a board meets 4 times a year, then the cost is at a certain level. If the board is seen as an implementing, as actually implementing the work of the office, then obviously the times that the hours that they put in would be longer and the costs would go up. So I think that rather than just looking at it as inevitably an extremely expensive structure, I think that's why the legal advisor did point out that it would be up to the committee to determine the numbers and also to determine the level of work that they would be expected to do, because that would drive the hours. I mean, quite often a board would meet for one day 4 times a year. Yeah, I mean, that's a fairly standard practice of a board. That's the kind of time they would put in. And obviously that level of time is not something that would break the budget. Now, if you want a board that would meet for 2 days every 2 weeks, then that would have serious budgetary implications. So it's not that there's a straight, simple answer that a board costs X. It depends on the nature of the board and the kinds of functions that it is envisaged to take over from the office.
I'm still not very clear. Because let me make an example. If I'm sitting at home, I want to get married. And then I tell myself that things might change. My wife might not be that expensive. But when I sit at home, I will tell myself that I'm going to get a ring. I'm going to pay lobola. I'm going to pay this. Obviously, the lobola, I don't know how much they're going to ask me to pay. But I still budget that. Okay, they might ask me for 10 cows. So let me budget 10 cows. Let me budget 50,000 for the ring. Let me budget 20,000 for the dresses that he's going to put. I don't know what is going to happen, but I put that money, even if things are going to change. Now, it's worrying. We don't want you to go to the nitty-gritty, but all we want to say is that if we pass this budget, are you going to have money to do this? It doesn't have to be the exact figure. And I see at the back of this, it's written the total budget, 11, 12, is going to be 28 million, 12, 13 is 48 million, 13, 14. Where was that budget coming from? What is it for? And even the board that we're talking about. If we talk about the board, we're not going to say they're going to meet once or twice. That is not our concern, but the concern, do we have money for the board that will be there? I think this is what the members are asking. At the hotel there, whether this
surprised by interjections whilst I was asking the question, but it's no big issue. Chair, the DG did express that she really would like to have a board for governance purposes. But that's another issue, and I'm putting it aside and apart. But what I would like to point out, boards generally meet 4 times a year, and we get extra expertise from the, not that I'm advocating for the board, but I'm saying these are the things that come out of the board. We get skills from the board because they're finance people, they're legal gurus, there's somebody with economics and whatever. So they're picked on those on those qualities, which would help the office. But also, I would like to see the CEO being a member of the board. I would like the CEO as a standalone, because the CEO is responsible for the day-to-day running of the organization and for employing staff and whatever. But the board is there to support the office because of the various skills that come out of it. And in most cases, it's not as expensive as we may think, because people are only paid for coming to a meeting. That's it. But members can think otherwise. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe can I bring the meeting into focus? We said as members of parliament that we are unhappy with the independence of the CEO of the ombudsman. And because of that, we thought that let her not be directly report to the minister, whatever. Because we thought that much as independence, it's a questionable thing. It depends. It's not very objective. But we said, okay, we want a board so that the CEO must report to that board. So this is our focus, that I want us to go that direction. Do we want something? And I think this needs to be answered by us. Do we think this institution, as it stands, is it totally independent, or we want it to have something that is going to make it more independent? And then we move from there. The question about finances, I think the problem about finances, whether there's going to be very little money that goes out to the board or not, but it's still going to come as to whether this whole thing has been budgeted for. Even if it's small amount of money, even if it's big amount of money, has it been budgeted? I would like us to discuss that. Okay, Honourable Robinson and Mackay.
Thank you, Chair. I really want to agree with Mabi. I think she summed up what I was going to say, which was that this is going to be a board. They are not going to be implementers. So I don't see why they should meet that often. They are there to keep an eye on what's going on. So probably 4 times a year would be sufficient, possibly 6. But also then we should probably not make it such a large board if we are trying to cut down on the cost. Incidentally, I wanted to suggest the name chairperson as well, before I forget about that. But we really need to look at who is going to be appointing the board, because if they've been appointed by the minister, then it's exactly the same as where we were before. So perhaps we need to find an alternative means of appointing them.
Well, we sometimes we talk on experience. Before I go to Mackay, I think if you look at the Council of Medical Aid Schemes, the council is appointed by the minister. Even this registrar is appointed by
going to engage. I don't know whether I'm not going to say I have a question per se, but I just wanted to deliberate on the issue of what is the meaning of two other members, or is this two other members in addition to that not more than 14? Now these two members are not specified. Why are they separated from that 14? Maybe what Honorable Mampi has just said, maybe you have been looking at the experts in law when I talk about those two others. But just to specify, I'm also looking at that, because here we're talking about the private public partnerships. Now, I'm not quite sure whether the private and public sectors are, the private sector is accommodated there in that too. So, also, maybe if you can just explain why is this two separated from the 7 to 14? Then just like Honorable Nobel just said, I want to deliberate, but if I have still got that gray area of that point under A. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll come back.
Members, can I make a request again? It seems as if the coming of this document has slightly changed the decision that were taken. Can we deliberate on whether do we think that as the bill stands, is the CEO and the ombudsman totally independent? Are they totally independent? Can we discuss that? Are we accepting them as they are, as it is on this bill, or we think that we need something else, which could be the board? I just want us to go over that. Maybe I'll call you Memo Tsipe. This is the question that I want us to answer.
Sebastian, I was still on the floor. I just wanted that part, because I said just to answer this question so that I can deliberate more. I think we still need the board, because we said we wanted to relieve the minister. But at the same time, we want to focus on the grey areas before we come to deliberate. That's what I was trying to say. So, there is a need for the board. But now what is worrying us is how the Ogaro Gremo, also, how do we shape the board, this board we're talking about?
May I ask you, if you say we agree that we need the board, can you leave it at that point? Don't worry about this document yet. Let's hear what the others are saying. Let's hear what the others are. You are still going to come back on this report that they've written, but I want to see whether the others are agreeing that is it independent enough should we form a board? Should we talk about the board? Okay, member. There was going to be a member.
Thank you, Chairperson. As well as we say we need the board. On the second page, 79B, slide 4, we are saying the minister may remove the chief executive officer from the office on account of SIGA's misconduct. But my worry is this one, B. This one, sir. Yes.
Can I do this one?
Okay.
Mama Zebe, that Makenya has said we need the board.
Yes.
For independence. And you are saying that we need the board.
Yes.
Okay, can we just hear from the others what they say? We'll come to this document. Oh, okay. Well, no, I think, wait, did you come before then, Patricia? Oh, you've raised the. Okay, let's get Patricia and then you'll come then.
Chair, I'm a little bit confused or concerned. I think what we need to assess, like you are saying, let's check the independence of this board. We're not against the board. And then in terms of the cost, maybe what we can ask the department, if maybe they can give us a breakdown of how Parliament is going to appropriate the whole thing, how much it's going to cost for what, because presently just a round figure. We don't know how much for administration, how much for what. Maybe if they can give us a guideline in terms of that. If I remember very well this morning, one of the concerns in terms of the independence, again, we were worried about the ombudsman. That should be the one that maybe the role of Parliament can also be included. I think
it seems as if a few people are agreeing that there needs to be a board. But in addition to that, we need to look at the function of the ombudsman and the chief versus the CEO. But I think this part of money, all we are saying to the department is that you need to budget for this. Mm-hmm. You don't have to give us today the breakdown, but we need, at a certain stage, this is not what's going to make us pass or fail it. But as long as you can tell us that we can budget and you need to give us a breakdown. Okay, another blue.
Chairperson.
We could have brought it go workshop when we started.
I would be understanding really well, Hori, why do you want the board, all those things? Because to me, too many cooks spoil the broth. We are bringing too many people. And at the end of the day, when I listened to the argument initially, it was saying because of independence. But like if the minister is going, we are not now adding on who the minister was supposed to appoint. We are adding on some members of the board. Now, to me, I felt that maybe another thing, we put a cart before the horses. We could have intensively really dealt with this. Now, here, I don't know other things, but already I want to put in a board, which I don't know if I said that, I don't, because where I'm sitting now, I feel that we don't need the board. But you find that it's because we were in page 2 or page 3 of the bill, then we decided that let us put it aside and look at this. I don't feel that we are doing justice to whatever we are supposed, unless it's, maybe it's because I'm so confused where I'm sitting, because I don't even know who is fooling who.
Mr. Khalid, in fact, I was looking at the hands. So you want to come? It is still on that point. Do we want the board or not? Yeah. Okay. No, I was looking at those with their hands up. Umzala didn't have a hand up.
Okay. I hear that there's good expertise if you have a board and it could be smaller, and those are good things. But as it stands now, I'm not seeing that it's actually solving our problem. So we're going to have to solve our problem with or without the board in terms of the independence. So which might mean either we go back to just simply looking at the CEO who can access technical expertise and just make sure that Parliament is more involved, or we look at the smaller board, but we make sure Parliament is more involved. So either way, the problem has to do with, I think, involving Parliament more in terms of the hiring and firing. I think we need to be advised as to how much difference there is in a CEO accessing technical advice on the specific situation and having a board that can sit 4 times a year. Are we disadvantaged hugely? And really, I think only the department can tell us how much the job would be disadvantaged or advantaged either way on that.
Chairperson, independence is never absolute. It is relative. We must be aware of that it would never be absolutely independent. Because at the end of the day, it has to report to the minister. So independence is not absolute, it's relative. Because they're not influenced by anything from whatever they're doing. If the ombudsman wants to do 1, 2, 3, he will do it, then report to the minister. So independence is not like Transkei and South Africa. It's relative in this instance. And may I propose that we park the board aside and continue with the bill, or else we'll never finish this bill. So, with all due respect to Gary, we might come back and think about the board, but for now, let's look at the bill as it stands before us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Members, we are saying there's a questionable dependency or independence of the CEO of the Ombudsman. And One other thing is that when we talk of independence, it's here, not there, because it's a subjective thing. But at the same time, we are saying the public there, how are they going to perceive this? Are they going to perceive it as not independent? Are they going to perceive it as independent? And the decision that we took was that there must be a board. Now, if we talk of a board, it's going to change a few other things here. Now, but I think the part that came to confuse was we didn't give a directive as to what type of board that we want. We just said we wanted a board, and the department tried to mention that there's an administrative board, there's a technical board. But we didn't go further and say the reason we want ourselves, the reason we want a board is 1, 2, and 3. And we want this type of board. All you need to do is to go and make it happen as official. Now, what I want to suggest is that I agree, let's continue with the bill, but now we can discuss this. I'm going to put down what we need to discuss here. I don't want us to go for clause by clause in this document that has been given. But what I want to suggest, we can discuss that. If we want a board, as we had done, as we had said, we want a board that might be constituted by the minister, but that the CEO is going to be part of the board meetings, or whatever you call it, council. But this board is the one that is going to be looking after. We want something that is going to remove the minister from the day-to-day runnings of the institution. I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to say. And the CEO must be the one who reports to them and must be the one who does the management, the finances, the human resources, but reports to the council or the board, whatever. And then those people must be chosen by the minister as to who should they be. This is what when we're talking about the board, this is what we're looking at. I want you members to tell me is it not what we want? Or is it what we're looking for when we're talking about the board? So that we give them directive that they must go and look at that. Okay, Honorable Dudley.
We did agree that we'd need a technical board if we were to have a board. And I don't know about anybody else, but when I look here, I clearly think more in terms of no more than 7 plus 2. But then we're not technical people, so we're not really, we've got to be advised, if that makes sense. It just somehow looks extremely excessive to have the numbers that were written here. But it looks like it's quite normal to have a board of the size of a maximum of 7 plus 2, and even specify that the plus 2 we're looking at legal expertise or something.
Maybe if you could go in, the boards are usually this number. I think the number of board members. But what is worrying here is that it is said that the board is going to be appointed by the minister. And the board, as it is in this paper, says it's an authority, meaning that all of them, they're just like a CEO reporting again to the minister, which is that part that is crucial, that the board must be there and the board must take decisions of the... But there must be a CEO that sits with the board, but at the same time, it's the board that takes the technical management of the thing. Okay.
So what are we right in saying that we're more inclined towards not having a chair but having a CEO, because that person is going to be the day-to-day running, although they sit as the chair of the board, and that CEO reports to the board? Is that what we're saying? So we lose the chair idea because we want to get the feeling of someone who's day-to-day, hands-on. But
maybe let's make an example like the Council of Medical Education. In the Council of Medical Education, there's a chairperson. There's a chairperson. There is a registrar. The registrar reports to the council on what is actually going on. And there's a chair who's part of the member. The chair is separate. The CEO sits in the meetings and reports
make their own decisions which are making the organization to run with that chair. So the CEO is not the chair, the registrar is not the chair.
So in that scenario, you'd have a chair being chosen by the board?
I think I want to align myself with the whip there. That let's start this thing with the board. Because some of us don't even know why should we discuss the board. Because if this document says the minister is going to appoint, and the question that I'm asking myself, people who are scared of the minister being in charge, he is the one who came with this concept of saying we want this. Does that not mean independency? Because he's dealing with the health. And he sees disaster. Now, why do we remove him? Not to be in charge to monitor his baby, to show that the baby is growing or is crippled. Can we shelve this board issue and then we'll see it? We'll know how to sneak it in if we agree, but we have spent the whole hour discussing the board.
I was just going to support Mangum when you say that because some of us are discussing this document, and therefore we feel it is unfair because some of us who wanted to just discuss it rather to deliver it on it, rather we will serve it then go to the field because we can't support it.
Chair, I still feel that we need a board. I quite agree with the honourable colleague here that the minister is the person who's in charge, but he's already in charge of the departments, you know, of the ministry as such. But he felt the need for something extra, which was independent. And I think we all feel that just for proper functioning, so that there can be no idea that it's not functioning as it should. But this brings me back to the point again, that our problem is that they're being appointed by the minister. And if we could get Parliament to appoint, then I think that all this confusion would be taken away because then it's appointed by Parliament. So I know this isn't a Chapter 9 organisation, but if you've got Parliament doing the process, there will be an openness, people will be coming together, they'll be looking at CVs, the decision will be made, and ultimately it will go back. But I think if it's just the minister appointing, we aren't really achieving anything, because the whole purpose that the public out there were saying is we want independence. So why don't we go back and consider having Parliament appointing the board?
I've been with Science and Technology, and members of the board have been appointed. But what happened is the department would, through the office of the DG, would look at the names of the people that have applied to become members of the board, and then after they've looked after. They've done, what do I want to say, because, but they've shortlisted. They would bring that shortlist to the committee to look through the shortlist. And if the committee was not happy of the shortlist, we would say, how many people? They say 120. Then we say, okay, just write a short service for them so that we work on it. But most of the time, those that were shortlisted would look through them and then would recommend to the minister that these are the names that have been shortlisted by the department. We've gone through them. We're happy about 1, 2, 3, 4, but not so happy about 5, 6. Then the minister would make his choice because from the list that comes, there are three more extra people that are put instead. If five people are required, the department would shortlist eight people or nine people. so that we'd be able to, as a committee, to choose from there, then to the minister for stemming.
Let's move forward now. I think let me come and Mamutu, you want to say something? I just want to round up this thing now so that we move on.
No, Chairperson, I'm getting big worried because you will say we mustn't discuss a bond again. And then we come with a proposal that say, can you put this aside and go through this because of time, Chairperson. Now I want to make myself clear that are we going to do this or are we going to discuss something, because I was having something to ask and then they said, no, let's not go with this discussion of a board. Can we go with the proposal, Chairperson, so that we can manage time? Thank you.
Maybe let me make it clear, Mama Jep. We said there are some members who are questioning the independence of the CEO and the ombudsman. And it was ourselves who agreed that to cover that, much as it is here or there, to cover that, let's have the board. But when the document came talking about the board, it was as if we were back to square one, because it was an authority, but of more people than the CEO that has an authority, but reporting to the minister. So it seems as if it's going back to the same. But what I want us to do, let's go back to our document and continue with the document and clause by clause, but we give the department to go and look at, if it so happens that we have a board, can we have a board that is going to be having a CEO that sits in that meeting, but a different chairperson, and then you bring that document, we'll have a look at it. But in the meantime, we're going to be going with it. But knowing very well that if that comes, and it's something that we're going to be accepting, there's a lot of things that are going to change in the bill. Okay. I was trying for us to move. Okay.
Chairperson, I was just regarding your proposal. I was thinking that you shouldn't forget the proposal of the whip of the ANC regarding how the board should be appointed by involving the parliament. I think that is the route that we can follow also.
We could ask Gary just to look for us, because the same with the Gender Commission and the Youth Commission, when it's done, it comes that similar route through Parliament. So perhaps to look what the wording is there. Is there a specific wording that makes that happen or not?
But what I'm not sure of, this is why I left this board. I left it deliberately. What we're not sure of, when we're talking of these boards, they differ. There are those boards that are nominated by Parliament, and they go to Parliament. There are boards that the minister appoints, even if they come with their CVs, but minister at the end of the day appoints. But still, the CEO sits in the meetings and reports to them, not directly to the minister. Not directly to the minister. But what we're going to be asking them to do is to go and look, if this is not Chapter 9, can Parliament appoint the board? And when they come with the document, they will tell us whether that can be done or not.
Yes,
officer may, in writing and by agreement, amend the performance agreement. Okay? The minister may remove the chief executive officer from office on account of serious misconduct, ill health, or inability to perform the functions of the office effectively. Members, I'm waiting for you to... Is it okay? Can I take it that silence means consent?
On the ill health, can the minister remove the officer because of ill health?
No, it is said that if you've got a stroke and you are right-handed and you can't use your right hand, obviously you're not going to be able to work, depending on the prognosis of that stroke. It could be full-blown HIV and AIDS, which is going to make you bedridden, or if you've got cancer of a particular area, obviously you just have to be boarded off work. So ill health could affect them. Okay. Five, the chief executive officer is, if the chief executive is unable to perform the functions of the office or during a vacancy of the office of chief executive officer, the minister may designate another employee of the office to act as chief executive officer. Okay. No person may be designated as chief executive officer for longer than 90 days at a time, that is 3 months. The chief executive officer is entitled to the pension and retirement benefits calculated on the same basis as those of the head of department in the public service. Okay.
Saying that you can remove someone for ill health, because I can be ill but I can still do my job. Ill like have a disease, but it's not affecting my job. But the minute it starts affecting my job, then it's a problem. So I'm suggesting we lose the ill health on its own and we link it to inability to perform the functions of the office effectively, including ill health, because then it's linked to an inability to do the job and not just...
Honourable, no. No, we'll come back.
I'd rather say then severe ill health.
Chairperson, why can't it be ill health which will affect her or his performance? Because if I'm ill, most of the time I'm at home, it affects my performance. If I'm ill, I cannot do whatever. I think it can be that the ill health, that can affect his or her performance.
Now, I'm going to be talking as a professional. Let's just leave them. I think we are treading on an area that probably we shouldn't be going to. When you talk of ill health, it can be anything, but the professional who looks after that person will decide what needs to be done. You can't say severe illness, because I can have severe asthma now, and at the end of the day I'm treated and I'm able to go back to my work. So it's not about severity. It's about the doctor giving a prognosis about that ill health. And that is not our terrain. Let's leave it as it is, because somebody is going to be looking at that person and decides whether that person has got an illness that cannot make him function. Let's leave it for ourselves as ill health, but somebody will decide. Because if it's flu,
the doctor will say, no, this person has the flu, must be off for 2 days and go back to work. It will be the professional person who will do that. So let's not take it to ourselves. Let's leave it as is. Okay. Five is the chief executive officer is unable to perform function. I think we've done this one. Over Grace. We finish with the appointment. So we go to the functions. Okay, the functions 79B, the chief executive officer is the head and accounting officer of the office. B is responsible for the proper and diligent implementation of the Public Finance Management Act 1999, Act Number 1 of 1999, and must appoint suitable qualified persons as employees of the office in accordance with the organizational structure approved by the minister. Okay, two, as head of the office, the chief executive officer is responsible for the inspection, insertion after the 79. Am I right? No. I think I've got a page that I've lost. Okay, I've got a page that I've lost. It's page or page one. Okay, let me go back again. As a head of office, the chief executive officer is responsible for A, the formation and development of an efficient administration. B, the organization and control of staff. C, the maintenance of discipline. And D, the effective deployment and utilization of staff to achieve maximum operational results. Okay. Three, the chief executive officer may enter into contracts with any person or organization or appoint experts or technical committees to assist the office in the performance of its functions, including the conducting of inspections. Okay. Then let's go to delegations of powers and assignment of duties by the chief executive officer. 79C, the chief executive officer may A, delegate to an employee of the office any of his or her powers in terms of this act, or B, assign to an employee of the office any of his or her duties in terms of this act. Is this not a repetition? Or assign, is delegate and assign. Do we accept that?
Yes.
Two, the delegations in terms of subsection 1 must be in writing. A, B may be subject to such terms and conditions the chief executive officer may determine or impose. C may at any time be amended or revoked by the chief executive officer, and D does not divest to chief executive officer of the responsibility concerning the exercise of the power. Okay. Let's go to accountability of and reporting by the chief executive officer, 79D. The chief executive officer must, subject to the Public Service Management Act of 1999, hello? Oh, what did I say? Oh, Public Finance Management. Sorry, thank you. A, cause the necessary accounting and other records to be kept. B, prepare and submit to the minister an annual report for approval by the minister within 5 months after the end of the financial year. Two, the annual report referred to in subsection 1 must include A, audited annual financial statements by the Auditor General, B, Auditor General's report, and C, a detailed report of activities of the office undertaken during the year to which the audit relates. Three, the minister must table in Parliament a copy of the annual report, financial statements, and audit report of those statements within 1 month after receipt thereof, if Parliament is in session, or if Parliament is not in session, within 1 month after the commencement of its next ensuring session. Four, the chief executive officer must, once the annual report, financial statements, and audit report have been tabled in Parliament, publish the annual report, financial statements, and audit report on those statements in the media. I don't hear a yes yet. Are you still digesting it? You want me to read it again? For the chief executive officer must, once the
annual report, financial statements, and audit report have been tabled in Parliament, publish the annual report, financial statements, and audit report on those statements in the media. Okay. 5. Notwithstanding subsection 1 and 2, the chief executive officer must, upon request by the minister, furnish the minister with information or a report in respect of any case, matter, or subject dealt with by the office, and B, provide the minister with reasons for any decision taken by the chief executive officer, an inspector, or any other employee in the office. Then we go to the appointment of health officers and inspectors, 81. The minister, relevant member of the executive council or mayor of the municipal council, may appoint any person in the employ of the national department, province, or municipality, as the case may be, as a health officer. Do you want to digest that one? Okay.
I just wanted to check. I'm sorry I didn't raise it when you were there. On point 79D, bullet 4, or number 4, when we talk of statement in media, what type of media are we referring to? Print, TV, or radio? Because the person can say, I did it on this and not on that. So are we referring media as a whole?
I don't know. Maybe the department can help us here. But what I know is that Parliament is a public place too. So the fact that these things have been in Parliament is just public knowledge. So whatever media that it can be on, it will be part of the public. But maybe you can help us. Which is the media that we are talking about?
They may come in before they come, if you don't mind. Once this has been, it means that the reports can be given out for people to read, can be, most of the time, the report is a public document, it's been to Parliament, it's been dealt with, then it can be distributed to whoever and wherever.
So you want the department to come in, because we're trying to explain what that sentence means. Okay, Honorable Dad.
The fact that it says publish, I mean, we publish things here at Parliament. There's a must there. So if we're going to have to, if they're going to must publish it in the media, it does seem a little sort of prescriptive. I think they must publish it for public access, maybe. I don't know whether it has to be published in the media, but we need to be advised what the norm would be.
We've got to come to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that this whole section actually relates really to the Public Finance Management Act. I don't think this is the technical reports of the office. So I think that generally any annual report is really about audited statements and activities undertaken. And I think that as a whole, these kinds of reports are generally, there's like a press statement and the annual reports are available, they're printed, and if the media picks them up, then they will be reported. But otherwise, it would be the role of the board probably to make this more accessible to the public. If the purpose is to reach the public rather than Parliament, because what is described in this section is really relating to how you process the reports of accounting officers under the Public Finance Management Act. So I think it would be handled just as any other annual report is. I don't think, as it's phrased here, it's about access by the public in general to the information, if that was what the question was.
I think it's very important to keep on going back to the
I think the point is it is that area. And then all these subsections are referring to probably to that.
That's good. It's just in terms of that explanation, this wording isn't correct there because it says must publish it in the media. And that's not saying that it must publish in the media. So now if that is in terms of the PFMA, then that's good and it's fine. But can we just have someone check that that's the wording that's always used? Otherwise, perhaps we would say it must be published for access. But it's just that it just seems like that explanation doesn't quite tie up with this wording. And it will be easy to check.
Okay. Maybe let's allow you to go and check. Instead of going back again to the must and the may. So if you can just check that must. Okay. Are you okay, Chris? Okay. Then we go to appointment of health officers, which we have started with the first one. And are you agreeing with the first sentence? Should I read it again? The relevant member of the executive council or mayor of a municipal council may appoint any person in the employ of the national department, the provincial department, or the municipality department, as the case may be, as a health officer. Okay. To the chief executive also must, subject to section 79B1C, appoint a suitably qualified person with appropriate expertise and skill as an inspector. I think the point that we need to highlight here is the difference between the health officer and the inspector. Okay, number three, a health officer or an inspector appointed in terms of this section must be issued with a certificate stating that he or she has been appointed as a health officer or as an inspector in terms of this act. Four, when a health officer or an inspector performs any function in terms of this act, he or she must be in possession of a certificate of appointment issued in terms of subsection 3. Must show that certificate to any person who is affected by the action of health officer or inspector in terms of this act and has the powers of a peace officer as defined in section 1 of the Criminal Procedure Act 1997, Act number 51 of 1997, and may exercise any of the powers conferred on a peace officer by law. This is legal jargon. You want me to read it again? Okay.
Is it necessary or not to say in terms of the regulations or something? Because obviously there's no explanation in this bill about what an inspector or an officer would be. So I'm just wondering whether it needs to point directly to the health department's regulations or something.
Can you come again, Honourable Dudley?
Okay.
Which area are we in?
Okay, just that whole section, because we're talking about health officers and inspectors, and we haven't defined them as far as I know, or we haven't specified anything to do with them, I would imagine that would be in the regulations, the health department's regulations. So I'm just wondering whether, because it's not in this bill, whether we should say in terms of when appointing those people in terms of the regulations of the department or something, so that we point to where they're going to get the guidelines for who these people are, what they're doing.
Do you get that, Dr. Masha? Okay, Honorable.
Chair, I think this is correct because when we're making an act, we're doing a bill to become an act, we cross-reference with other legal instruments that are there, with other acts that are already there. We cross-reference. So I think this is in order. If the act is peace... Thank you. I was just wanting to point out that in point 4, it says there, in terms of this act. So surely that covers us.
it's in terms of the act, but the act is silent on it. So that means somewhere so we've got to give a voice to it. So if we point to regulations, then there'll have to be regulations too.
I'm not sure if I'm getting Honorable Dudley closer. Maybe can you explain further, Honorable Dudley?
I think if we go to the point that's just been mentioned, four, say, for example, when a health officer or an inspector performs any function in terms of this act, he or she, well, then the function, now that's actually talking about the function they perform in terms of this act. But what I was thinking of is when the departments are appointing or the municipalities appointing these people, there's nothing like we go into great length about how we're appointing a chief executive officer, etc., and all the details to do with that job. Here it's silent about that. So I'm assuming that there would be regulations that relate to that. So I'm just suggesting that we put it there. So that, in other words, it might be that every municipality can have their own idea of what governing appointing a health officer or inspector. Or it might be that the national department want to have the regulations about what governs that. So I'm just suggesting that we point to the regulations that govern that.
Maybe in trying to understand what Honorable Gat is saying, I think the bill is about investigating, about having norms and standards and investigating whether people comply with those norms and standards. And now it talks about the chief executive officer appointing an inspector, but on the other side, having health officers, which are not appointed by the chief executive, but they are appointed by the minister, the MEC, the mayor. But basically, the work that they are going to be doing is to set the norms and standards, monitor them, and take that person to task if they are not complying with that. But I agree with you that there will be regulations to that.
Point, because exactly what you said is not written here.
Okay.
So it's probably got to be written somewhere else.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Can we pass on? You still want to?
I understand what you're saying. Well, I think I do anyway. But I'm just thinking from the point of view of a municipality, if you're going to be appointing somebody as a health officer, as they say here, there certainly are regulations in the municipality that determines what the function is and, you know, who is applicable. So aren't we just going into overkill? Because if they're saying it's the municipality or the executive or the mayor, he would have to have a framework according to which he appoints somebody.
You can talk through the chair, Honorable Dudley. What were you saying?
I'm saying that was my initial question, was is it necessary? So they can decide. I've seen it there before, and it's supposedly been necessary before, that we cross-reference because we're not stipulating here in this bill, then we can point to where it is stipulated, and that would be regulations. But it would be for them to give us that.
Do you want to go to this one?
I think it is considered good legal practice that the governing act must empower the development of regulations. So I do, and you may find yourself being unable to issue regulations if it has not been stipulated in the act. So I think it's not complicated and probably correct.
Thank you. Okay, can we pass on then from that one? Okay. Appointment of the ombuds. The minister must appoint a suitably qualified and experienced person as an ombud. Are we agreeing on that? Number two, the ombud A holds office for a non-renewable term of 5 years. B is located.
Is that where you possibly...
elected for 7 years, non-renewable. And I would like to know why the Department of Health wanted 5 years, because seven is the in thing for ombuds to be there for 7 years.
Are you finished, ma'am? Are you saying the time is too short in America, the 4 years? They should relook at it. Okay. Okay.
My question was this where we envisaged, if we don't go the board route or whatever, that we wanted to have that additional bit of independence by making some little parliament process? And then I would think 81.1 would be perhaps where we would put that.
I would suggest that maybe in your question, let's just look through the whole thing. And then we can come up with those questions.
Yeah, because we can search in the meantime to see how it's worded. Perhaps, I know the commission's a different thing because it's the president or whatever, but there might be some wording there that we can utilize.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was going to say that this morning where we had an argument or some concern, it was about the independence of the ombudsman, specifically about the appointment. That's where, like, I'm supporting you. We're saying that how Parliament can be involved in terms of appointing this ombudsman so that he can be an independent person, not having any influence of any political
whatever. Maybe let me just allow the department to respond to that question of 5 years. And then we go through the whole appointment of the ombuds, and then we start discussing. Okay. Can the department answer that question of 5 years? Versus 7 years?
My apologies, Chair. We're having an audit committee meeting. We've just finished. No, Chair, we were suggesting 5 years because most the executive director, CEO, was appointed for 5 years. It wasn't for any reason, but if the practice for the ombuds is 7 years, and given that it's not renewable, I think it's in order.
There's nothing that ties the department to 5 years. It can be any number of years. I think that's the answer. Okay, can we go through the whole appointment of the ombuds, and then we can entertain this discussion? I said B is located within the office, that is the Office of Standards of Compliance.
Chairperson, my understanding with South Africa is that we have been told that we are running short of skilled and experienced people to an extent that we import people from other countries. Now, my worry has been, if a person is good, why do we say not renewable? Why don't we say, I don't know which word can we use, but pending on the performance of the person. Because we might say it's full stop and not be able to get somebody who can replace that person at that time.
Thanks very much. Let me just narrate two stories. When I was doing medicine in Natal, there was a man who was married to a nurse. And then this man allowed the wife to do dancing. And they were dancing for so many years that they got used to each other to an extent of having an affair. Now, one seems to suspect that if that man would have said, no, you do this for 2 years and not renewable, that would not have happened. The second one, when I was in MEC in Eastern Cape, is that they used to employ private security guards to look after the hospital. And you would notice after a year, most of those guys had friends within the hospital, girlfriends, whatnot, And people were moving out with things because they know I'm going to talk to so-and-so. They got used to them. So I suspect that when you are doing this type of job, I don't know, the department might answer. It's a job that you mustn't get used to a lot of people. Otherwise, things are going to happen as if nothing is. So you better put that person for 7 years and say, get out, let me get a new one, because that one is going to be starting afresh. I don't know, but the department would agree or disagree with what I'm saying.
I think that was exactly the thinking behind it. Well, we would never have come up with a story.
The other thing, for instance, as we say, we try, for instance, you will see, if you say the period is now renewable, or depending on what you say, depending on that, then it will obviously interfere with the independence of that person, because mm-hmm. now if the minister, depending on what may have said now, if the minister say, okay, this one is pliant to my instruction, then he's not independent, he's pliant, I can interfere, and he's pliant to my interference. Then the minister will, always there will be that thing of the extension. Or he will decide to be pliant so that he can get the extension at the end of the day. Then you lose the whole issue of independence at the end of the day. But if it's not renewal, then he will do what he's supposed to do. He knows that he can be removed, and then after 7 years, he just leaves. People, because nowadays people will be compliant so that I must get a renewal of my contract after this period of 5 years is finished or 7 years is finished, and then it compromised the whole concept of independence, because my renewal depends on how my relationship with the person at the end of the day is going to renew that contract is going to be. But if the issue of non-renewal, the person say, I'll just do my job as I see fit. I know at the end of the day it's not going to be removed. Then the independence still remains intact.
You are sorry.
That if I'm a qualified somebody who knows that I have skills and can be employed privately, on the private sector, I'm trying to say that. Why go for a 7 years? Because maybe you get a young person who qualifies, who wants to make ends meet and who wants to start a life. How many can go for a sort of a temporary arrangement? Like this 7 years. You may find that we are going to get people who are just, unless if we say age will be age is not going to count, because like now somebody was saying, if I'm 70 years, if you are going to employ people who are 50 years, 55 years, then the contract of 7 years to me makes sense. But if you get a younger person who still wants to make life for himself or herself, that's our experience. People are running to private because of that.
Okay, I see Pat is going to hand
up. Sorry, I don't want to spoil what the legal person said, but here the issue is here the issue is about what type of job this person will be doing, the importance of that office.
This is my understanding. I think that there was one other something that was coming from the other center. Zubair, you want to say something?
Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't actually want to. Chairperson, the issue of restraint of trade for the ombud, after the ombud's term of office finishes, is there the possibility that the ombud could work for one of the industry players that he or she has been overlooking? So should there not be a restraint of trade be built into this, so that the person does not go and work for a company whom he or she has investigated or whatever after the fact? So, to prevent leniency and bias and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
can't work in that sector anymore, where are they going to go afterwards? Because you want a health person to work at the health ombudsman, not a engineer to work at the health ombudsman, who then has the option, if there's a restraint of trade, to go and work back in the engineering sector. Whereas this person has health expertise, that's why he or she has been hired, and that's the only place he or she has to go after that 7 years is finished. So that's my concern around having a restraint of trade in that.
Sometimes the more questions you ask, the more confused you get. But okay, let's go through the appointment of the ombud, and then we'll discuss some of the things. Okay, another. Okay, we said C is assisted by a person designated and seconded by the office with the concurrence of the ombud. Okay.
Really
still have hopes that because it's a South African, it's going to be somebody who's got. I'm not saying that is better, but it's like if I employ you with your certificate of BCom, I employ you because I want you to do a particular job. The only thing that I'm hoping is because you've got the certificate, you're going to count the monies. But you might find that with your certificate, you're not going to be able to count the money. But it is that hope that because you've got the certificate, you will do better. And the onus is going to be on me who has employed you, that if I employed you because you had that certificate and you're still failing me, then I fire you. And I'm sure it will be the same here. You just use that certificate of citizenship as the thing that tells you that probably that person is going to be patriotic. But if that person is not patriotic, or he's a South African, but he still thinks the South Africans, you find that person. Okay. I don't want us to dwell on this thing because it was just a digression. Okay, Mark, can you come? I saw you.
I was just going to say the same thing what you're saying, because at the end of the day, the homeless person is going to deal with the complaints of the South Africans. Therefore, we can't say that the person from the foreigner can be a patriot in that case, because he doesn't know the people, how they behave like, because he's not specifically born in South Africa. So I was just going to say what you're saying, but when I heard that, I just support what you're saying.
I'm hoping that this is not regarded as xenophobia.
No. Chairperson, I don't think we are paranoid here.
Yeah.
What I want to register in this house today is that one of the requests or the requirement of a president is job creation. And we know that South Africans are crying. We have people who have all these degrees who are shelving their gowns under the bed as part of a pillow. So if we go and import before we can even know that we have, to me is contrary to what our aims and objectives are.
Thank you. I think let's go back to that point that everybody has got a right to say what they want to say in this meeting. So we mustn't feel that even if, as long as we're talking with respect to each other, but everybody must be able to. Is there something that you want to say? You know, everybody must be able to say what they want to say. Whatever, but the important thing is to be able to explain the point that they are trying to make. So, and we've got enough time, we want to finish this, so let's not be in a hurry. Okay, can we go on? We are at 4. The ombud may at any time resign by submitting a written notice to the minister at least 90 days prior to the intended date of vacation of the office, unless the minister allows for a shorter period. Okay, we're agreeing, yeah? Number 5, the minister may terminate the employment of the ombud on account of serious misconduct, incapacity, or incompetence after affording him or her reasonable opportunity to be heard and subject to the applicable legislation. 6, the minister must, during a vacancy or when the ombud is unable to fulfill any of his or her functions, appoint a person on a temporary basis in accordance with the subsection 1 to act in the position until a permanent person appointed. Let me go back now to that independency, dependency, because there was that question, but we wanted to finish this, or should we tie that up with the functions? Okay, let's go to the functions then.
It doesn't have anything to do with the functions. It's entirely to do with the appointment. So it was just the process of the appointment. We were asking, can somebody have a look and see what suggested wording could be that could include a parliamentary process in that initial sentence? But it's not to do with function. It's actually only to do with appointment.
correct me, Honorable Dudley. I think the question here was the dependency or the independence thereof of the ombud. Now, when we talk of functions, that's where we're going to see whether is he independent or is he dependent on something.
Sorry, sir. I was referring to my intervention earlier, and then you said hold it to the end. So what I'm saying is we haven't dealt with that there.
Maybe let me put it this way, that we're going to deal with yours and with the one of dependence on dependence when we finish the functions. Okay, can we go back? Functions of the ombud. The ombud may, that is 81A, the ombud may, on receipt of a written or a verbal complaint relating to norms and standards, or on his or her own initiative, consider, investigate, and dispose of the complaint in a fair, economical, and expeditious manner. Okay? Number two, a complaint referred to in subsection 1 may involve an act or omission by a person in charge of or employed by the health establishment or any facility or place providing health services. Health service. Number two, a complaint referred to in subsection 1 may involve an act or omission by a person in charge of or employed by a health establishment or any facility or place providing a health service. Okay. Number three, in conducting an investigation, the ombud may, subject to subsection 8. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Oh, subsection 8. A, be assisted by a person contemplated in section 81(2)(c). B, small letters, small Roman figures 1, obtain an affidavit or declaration from any person. 2, direct any person to appear before him or her. 3, direct any person to give an evidence or produce any document in his or her possession or under his or her control which has a bearing on the matter under consideration or being investigated. And lastly, interrogate such person. Okay, C, request an explanation from any person whom he or she reasonably suspects of having information which has a bearing on a matter under consideration or which is being or to be investigated. And D, require any person appearing as a witness to give evidence under oath or after having made an affirmation. 4, a direction contemplated in subsection 3B may be waived of a subpoena containing particulars of the matter in connection with which the person subpoenaed is required to appear before the ombuds and served on the person subpoenaed either by the registered letter sent through the post or by delivery by a person authorized thereto by the ombuds. 5, if it appears to the ombud that any person is being implicated in the matter being investigated, the ombud must afford such a person an opportunity to be heard in connection therewith by way of giving of evidence, and such person is entitled through the ombud to question other witnesses determined by the ombud who have appeared before the ombud in terms of the section. Okay, should we go on? Oh, there are questions. Okay. 6, the ombud may, in consideration, in considering or investigating a complaint in terms of this section, require the assistance of or refer the complaint to any other authority established in terms of legislation or any other appropriate and suitable body or entity to investigate similar complaints. 7, the authority body or entity, as the case may be, contemplated in subsection 6 must provide A, the ombud with the assistance required, and B, report to the ombud on the progress made in relation to the complaint referred to it. contemplated in this act. And then only the extent that the answer or statement is relevant to prove the offense charge. After each investigation, that is 9. Okay.
So it's okay, I'll read it on my own afterwards since everybody else thinks it's fine. Thank you.
After each investigation, the ombudsman submit a report together with his or her recommendations on appropriate action to the chief executive officer. Can the chief executive officer may, subject to subsection 9, request the intervention of the minister, a member of the executive council responsible for health in a province, or a member of the municipal council responsible for health if the complaint relates to the matter falling under the national department or that particular province or municipality, as the case may be. 11, where the chief executive officer fails to act in accordance with the findings and recommendations, the ombud may request the intervention of the minister. Let's go to the independence, impartiality, and accountability of the ombud. Your question has not been forgotten, Honorable Gagley. 81B, the expenditure connected with the appointment and functions of the ombud is paid out of the funds appropriated by Parliament for that purpose as part of the budget of the office. 2, when dealing with any complaint in terms of this act, the ombud, including any person rendering assistance and support of the ombud, A, is independent and impartial. Is that okay? And B, must perform his or her functions in good faith and without fear or favor, bias, or prejudice. 3, the minister, department and office must afford the ombud such assistance and support as may be reasonably necessary for the ombud to perform his or her functions effectively and efficiently. 4, the ombud must, within 1 month after the end of the financial year, prepare a report for the minister on the affairs and functions of the ombud during the financial year in question and submit such report to the chief executive officer for inclusion in the report referred to in section 70D1. Okay, can I stop there and then we come with those questions that we're coming with? We'll stop there. Okay, come, oh, okay.
Let me ask, so that I must be clarified. Number 3. The minister, department, and office. What does that mean? Which office and what are we referring to? The office.
Okay. Yeah, I think in the definition, there's something that says the office means the Office of Standard Compliance. That's what it means. There are certain things that we wanted to discuss about the dependency thereof. What do we say? I know your question was... Okay, come with your question, Honorable Dudley, before we go to the...
Okay. We spoke about the perceptions of the public in terms of independence. We know that there's no such thing as independent, but we were talking about the perception. So my understanding was that we were heading in the direction that 81.1, where it talks about the minister must appoint a suitably qualified and experienced person as ombud, somewhere there it should include a process, include Parliament in the process to give a sense of greater transparency, etc., etc. And that may add to the perceptions that the appointment of this person, that this person is going to be more independent because it's a more transparent kind of process. So that was the one thing. The other thing I wanted to question was, are we going with the 5 years or the 7 years? And then the third thing I wanted to just say was number five, where it says misconduct, incapacity, and incompetence. That wording would be suitable for that other section where I queried, because I really do think we're going to open ourselves a little to constitutional issues on that ill health thing. So that wording would be more appropriate. So those were just the three things that I wanted to do flag.
Those are questions of those are the questions, and I think all of us, we can try and answer and help each other. But before, I'm hoping even the department is going to help us. Okay, come back.
Thank you, Chair. Before the department help us, I think the last time I remember during the public hearing, it came out very clearly. People were saying that but here I don't see anything. They were saying that after the ombudsman have investigated the matter, can he adjudicate on anything? Do you remember it was something that was asked? So if maybe we can just have a clarity on that.
I think there's something that talks about, but we're going to come to it, where they talk about the appeals. Is it not going to fall under that? Which is still coming. Yeah, still coming. So shouldn't we wait until we get to those areas? Or you want the answer now?
Rather than nominating, that we go with the interviewed, short
want to know, when we're talking about Parliament, are we talking about this committee that is going to make the recommendation, or are you talking about a special ad hoc committee that's going to be appointed?
Oh, you want to answer that?
Normally it's an ad hoc committee, but the parties would put forward, obviously, the person they think is most relevant, which would likely be their person on the health committee. So I don't think we have to specify this committee. It would be an ad hoc committee, and then parties are free to do what they want to do with it.
The question of 5 years, I think I'll go with the suggestion of WIP, which lets be in the scope of the reimbursement of 7 years. But I still feel that maybe we are not too happy and we don't trust our ministers, but in most cases I think the committee has got nothing to do with appointment of Umejiji. Now the question I'm asking myself, what's the difference between all the people that were appointed by the minister in relation to the ombudsman?
There is a question. I think the first one is about the 5 years, which I think the department says in no uncertain terms that they've got, don't have a problem with the 7 years. The only thing that probably would ask is that, how long does it take to get used to somebody? Does it take a year? Does it take 5 years? Does it take 7 years? Because the aim here was to change this person so that he mustn't get used to the people that he's working with. So is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? Is it 5 years? But I think we've agreed that we can decide. There's nothing that is holding the department. And the other question that is coming from Umed Dube, probably the department should help us. You had the question. It seems as if they didn't hear the question. Can you come again?
Chair, the point that you're raising was unrelated. I think it's a technical drafting issue that the lawyers will refer to later. It was unrelated, but it's just that it's within the same context, and I can refer to it. It's a minor technical drafting problem. We make reference to the minister department, and we're trying to see whether there's a definition of a department. So in the list of definitions, it's national department. So maybe it's a small error that the lawyers can correct.
Okay. Are we okay with this and the independence, the dependency thereof? Are we okay? So can we move on? Okay. Come.
I just wondered, how are you going to finalize what we just suggested? Maybe before we can go forward, Parliament will nominate and then Minister will appoint the person. How do we go forward?
Maybe the drafters can help us in wording that part, which you said is within the law, it can be done. Maybe can I suggest, sometimes English can be very difficult, even for English-speaking people. Can we go on while they're preparing the draft of how they're going to put it, and they'll come to us before we finish?
An hour ago, I suggested that somebody go and look at the appointing of the Youth Commission and the Gender Commission, because although that is president who does that, the process may very well be the process that we want here, and it might simplify it for us because the wording might be there.
Okay.
Honorable Ngqo.
Maybe because those are statutory bodies, I think if you want any reference, why not use the defense, which is a department like the Department of Health? Thank you.
If right, Honorable, that you are saying that you agree with this fact that let's continue, but we allow them to look into those and cross-reference into whatever. Okay, can we? That's another room. Can I come again?
I'm saying this place is...
Okay, I think the temperatures are changing even outside, but do we have air conditioners here? I'm told that the lunch or the dinner is ready. So let's break for 45 minutes.
Will draw it from the members of the portfolio committee, but they will look
to other members as well outside the portfolio committee in order to strengthen the skills in everyone. That is the other issue. The third issue, Chairperson, is that there is no in the function there is nowhere that it says the ombudsman must notify, must go back, for instance, to the complainant or to the respondent after the investigation has been completed. Just talk that he must submit a report to the CEO or recommend all that, but there's no way that the complainant or the respondent must be informed of the decision or whatever the recommendation after the investigation has been concluded. So if the committee will want us to look at that, and maybe come with that way, we say at least the person who has complained. Because at the end of the day, people who complain, they will not, because it's not put in the legislation, and they will not receive anything after the investigation is completed, then we're still left with the same problem or anything because they haven't received anything. So if we can put just one sub-clause there just to cover that, to ensure that at least the quality descends, at least they are informed after the conclusion of the person complaining is informed after that decision. I think the fourth issue that I've picked up, Chairperson, is the issue that the fact that we haven't defined a complaint. Mm-hmm. A complaint, just pick up while we're reading, Chairperson, the fact that we haven't defined a complaint. I don't think now I've picked up something. I thought in the back of my day somewhere that we try to specify what this complaint will be. And I think subsection 2 of that section where you start, it really tells you what the complaint is all about, because it is in this section where the complaint comes into relevance and it tells you what the complaint is. That could may involve the act or omission by any person in charge of the health establishment or anything. So at the end of the day, I just want to put it to members that it might not be necessary anymore to define the complaint in the definition section, because the complaint here is covered what the complaint constitutes of or comprises of or constitutes. It is, because there it's clearly defined, the complaint, because it's defined in terms of this section that deals with complaints against health.
Thanks. Do you want us to delay dinner, or do you want us to go for dinner and then come and entertain this? Come.
I agree that complaint is explained well there. Is it...
Maybe, Honourable Dutty, let's answer this question. Do we go on or do we come back for it? Let's just answer that question before you go on.
Can we come back for it, Chair?
Okay. Okay, let's go for 45 minutes and I'm sure by 5 past 7 we should be back here. I'm told that it's in the mass building dining hall. In the meantime, we're going to be trying to sort out the toilet paper thing.
Thank you.